Support for the South Carolina Lead is made possible in part by AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, keeping us apart, but we don't have to be alone. AARP is here in South Carolina, providing information that can help you and your family. Click to connect at aarp.org/sc.
Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the Lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on May 25th, 2020, from my parents' house in James Island, in a closet filled with pillows. And just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a trip to Folly Beach. For work. A legislative recap with reporter Mayon Schechter, a look at the upcoming RBC Heritage Golf Tournament, and how hospitals are staffing back up. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute-long voicemail at 803-563-7169 and tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what life has been like for you. That's 803-563-7169. Currently in South Carolina, the spread of COVID-19 remains ongoing, according to the Department of Health and Environmental Control. There have been 440 deaths, and there are currently 10,178 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of May 25th at 3:40 p.m. We reached 10,000 cases on Sunday at a quicker clip than previous 1,000 case milestones. We did this in 6 days. We've been around 7 or 8 days in the past, but now we're at 6. Granted, testing has ramped up, and DHEC says they're on track to test 220,000 people by the end of June. So we'll see in the coming weeks how things stack up. And you can find plenty of free testing locations around the state, as well as so much more information at accelerate.sc.gov. Now, did you catch This Week in South Carolina last Friday or Sunday? Well, I caught up with two of our favorite lead guests, Mayon Schechter with the state newspaper and Jeffrey Collins with the AP. We talked about the end of the legislative session, the upcoming plan to disperse federal COVID-19 funds, and what a two-week session in September might look like. Now, we had some technical difficulties getting Jeffrey on the line, and when we finally got him on Skype, our audio was still pretty rough. So we're going to hear from Mayon in this segment, and I start off by asking her about when lawmakers return in mid-June to take up the funding plan for the COVID-19 money.
That money is very specific in that it's supposed to be, like you mentioned, dealt with reimbursing state agencies, higher education, State Department of Education, local governments for all their COVID-19 expenses. And that Accelerate SC subgroup, chaired by a former state senator, Greg Ryberg, proposed using a good chunk of those dollars for new things like the expansion of broadband internet. Mm. That is a huge endeavor to take in, and it's very hard to see whether that is something that the legislature is going to be willing to chew on in a week, in maybe a couple of days, depending on how long it takes them to go through this mini COVID-19 budget. We do expect, obviously, the governor has final say over that wish list, over those recommendations. He's going to treat it very similar to how he treats an executive budget. I expect that some of those numbers, some of those spending projects might be a little different. The House at least has indicated that they're going to treat the Accelerate SC recommendations like a blueprint. So we could see some definite changes. I think that's the expectation.
And Mayon, just to wrap up this section before we talk about Accelerate SC and the federal money coming into the state, I want to get your thoughts on, we just saw all these big ticket items that were in the budget that passed, like Jeffrey was saying, you covered the budget too, that was passed right before everything kind of hit pause in the state. And we had teacher pay raises, we had state employee pay raises, we had $100 million going towards state prisons. What do we expect lawmakers to do when they come back in September and they do say, okay, things have settled a little bit, maybe we have a better idea about where funding's looking like? What happens to these priorities that we saw get passed by the House that, now sits in the Senate and TBD come September?
Yeah, without knowing the full revenue projections, I think lawmakers, especially budget writers, are very hesitant to show off confidence that they're going to be able to fulfill some of those big ticket items, like you mentioned, you know, putting more money toward infrastructure improvements that had been on the books for years, putting more money to state employee merit pay raises or other state employee pay raises, teacher pay raises. I think that there's going to be a pretty heavy concentration on really just ensuring that the basic state services can be funded. I think there's going to be a heavy concentration on ensuring that state health care plans, things like that, are going to be able to be funded. I mean, there's also maybe a need for raising the money that's in the unemployment trust fund that could happen beyond just the CARES Act money that comes down. So without knowing full projections, I think it's been very difficult for lawmakers to just come out publicly and say, yeah, I think we're going to have all this money to do all these things. I just don't think that's a reality. And when I've talked to senators, I mean, they really see, as you both have mentioned, that they're going to have to start completely over. I mean, a lot of the big ticket items that the House passed, I mean, that's March. And that is not what September is probably going to look like.
Mm-hmm. You know, again, we're going to see the lawmakers come back in September. This will be after June primaries. This will be before November elections. Everyone's up for election in the state house, you know, all your House and all your senators. Mayan, what can we expect from this two-week session? You know, bills that are still in play that have crossed over from either the House or the Senate are still in play. Bills related to COVID-19 will be in play. Is it going to be, what can we expect? Is it going to be a free-for-all? What do we think?
You know, I don't think that there's one word to describe it. We were just talking about this earlier. If it's anything like May 12th, when they were here for a day passing the continuing resolution, passing the sign-e-die resolution, I think it's going to be a long form sort of look like that. It's going to be, I think, a very dizzying couple of weeks, a lot of legislative ping-ponging, a lot of maybe actual running between chambers. I think it's going to just be a very, very high level of activity, probably a lot of stress, especially as they try to deal with this budget. And like you mentioned, it's right around the corner from the November election. So this is going to be the final time people can try and get their legislation passed, get things attached to the budget. There's just going to be a lot going on.
You can find that entire episode online at scetv.org/TWISC. Or on our YouTube page at youtube.com/SouthCarolinaETV. And don't forget to mash that subscribe button, y'all. Moving on to our business section, I spent part of my Memorial Day down at Folly Beach. Working. Hadn't planned on it since Victoria gave us such a great dispatch from the Isle of Palms last week. Alas, PBS NewsHour came calling, so I grabbed them some footage and an interview with Folly Beach Mayor Tim Goodwin about how the unofficial start to summer is shaping up for the beach community.
If you was here a couple of weeks ago, this whole area back where we're standing now would just be empty. You might see one car go by once in a while. So it went from pretty much a ghost town, like many downtown areas were, to a bustling business just like as usual almost.
Now, Memorial Day traffic was much lighter and basically almost non-existent in the morning hours compared to the days before. It could have been that folks got their fill or somewhat menacing clouds led to some second-guessing despite a dry forecast. But on Center Street, the main drag, which is dotted with bars, restaurants, and beach shops, business was returning, and shopkeepers said they've been making up for lost time since the beach community reopened to visitors on May 15th. Devon Graham of Beachwear and Gifts tells me boogie boards, clothes, and buckets have been moving off the shelves.
We're opening back up and things are getting really busy now. I've worked here for about 4 or 5 years and I think it's more busy right now than it ever has been, to be honest.
What do you think's driving that?
Because people want to come back outside. People have been bored.
What's it been like for your business? What's it been busy on the street?
Yeah, it's almost like doubled, to be honest with you. We did lose a bit of business, but now I think we're making up for it big time, for sure.
As for Folly Beach Mayor Tim Goodwin, he expects a tax revenue dip, which will have some ramifications, but he hopes it's the only big revenue dip of the season.
Our hotel, we only have one major hotel, and they're still at 50% capacity. That's their choice of opening up in their phases. And it's going to take a while to get those back. Of course, we're never going to collect as much taxes like accommodation taxes and hospitality taxes as we would have last year. So like every other municipality, we're going to have to tweak the budget. Next year won't be as much money to play with and spend on services. So you pick all the services that are really required, like public service, trash pickup, fire department, police department. You get those funded, and then you look at what's left to do other things. I can't put a number on the business because that's really tough. But ours is probably going to be looking at about 85 to 90% maybe of what we would have seen last year. Hopefully it doesn't fall much below that. But we're always ready for emergencies, and this is just an emergency that keeps on being an emergency. It's not like a hurricane, it comes and goes. But now we're opening back up in the middle of the beginning of hurricane season, and you hate to say that, but that's the reality. So now we got to get ready for the next time.
Hurricane season, oof, kicks off next Monday, folks, June 1st. But hopefully we'll make it through the summer before anything pops up, or hopefully nothing pops up. And I got a little insider pro tip for all you beach bums out there, or people who think they're beach bums. Here's a pro tip. Listen up, kids. Pack the car the night before and head to the beach by 8 a.m. You'll cruise, you'll find parking, and you'll have your pick on the beach. You'll get a great spot on the beach, and then some family from New Jersey will sit right in front of you. Perfect. And then you can eat breakfast, go get coffee, catch up on your sleep, whatever. Just get to the beach ASAP. If you feel comfortable, rally your people and go. Did you all watch the match with Tiger Woods, Peyton Manning, Phil Mickelson, and Tom Brady on Sunday? Well, it was mildly entertaining and really one of the only live sports events we've seen these days, sans NASCAR. Well, South Carolina will soon play host to its own golf tournament, the RBC Heritage in Hilton Head. Mike Switzer with the South Carolina Business Review has this interview with organizer Steve Wilmont.
So tell us how all of this came about. How did you find out that the tournament was going to be held after all?
In working with the tour to try to resolve, our exposure and sunken costs and things that happened in April, all of a sudden out of the blue, opportunity was presented by the tour. And the farthest thing from our mind when I got the call was, hey, would you be interested? With date changes and other things, that there might be a possibility, would you consider it? And even before he said that, I'm like, yes is the answer. What's the question? So it's a true compliment to this community, this state, certainly Harbortown, the Heritage Classic Foundation, the staff, to this community especially as well, to say, yeah, let's give it a shot. Let's do it. Now, it's certainly under unique circumstances. It's no spectators or sponsors, but we look upon the fact that we as a state certainly couldn't even pay for the exposure we're going to get the week of the tournament, which would be tremendous for all of us.
That's the answer to my next question. The economic impact, of course, is going to be much smaller now without a normal tournament being held. But as you said, the state, the community will be on TV.
Yes, and we're looking upon as this is by not having the tournament in April, which is annually $100 million plus in economic impact to this community and state. But then think of what the world's going through right now. I mean, sometimes I catch myself saying, I'm sitting here worried about a golf tournament, and I'm like, it's just a golf tournament. But I also realize how important it is, and knowing that people have lost their lives and people have lost their jobs and people losing their businesses. But we also know, to try to get back on course, if we could be a part of the solution, being able to have this opportunity, knowing that there's no doubt that you can pull the plug overnight, but you can't plan overnight. So it's a very fluid situation, and the staff here working with the tour, working with our local and state authorities, but certainly working with Ponte Vedra being PGA Tour, has been a team effort and one that we're all learning from it as well.
What are the new protocols in order to keep the players safe, the staff, and I'm guessing there will be a minimal amount of media there?
And that's where we could talk for hours about it in a way, because there is the bubble. The bubble, as we talk about, are those that need to be tested. There is outside the bubble of volunteers and others that are there, but will be tested every day from the thermal screening. So there's a protocol for the players being tested before they get here, being tested when they're here. That's all being in place. There's obviously the sanitation side of things, too, of what we're doing, social distancing, how we're implementing it with the staff and volunteers, and you know how the players have to social distance, and you know the caddies can interact with players, but still there's many, many different protocols, but it's all been really vented out, and we're going to learn from it. You know, we'll learn from Colonial, the first tournament on the schedule, and we'll tweak some things for our tournament. You know, these are uncharted waters, as we know, unprecedented times, extraordinary times, but the proper precautions and safety measures are being taken, and you know that is still will be the priority.
And at this point, are you able to share with us the plans for next year's tournament?
Right after the June event, we'll start planning for 21, but you know we'll see what happens in the environment, you know, what's happening in the world, and we want to get back on track. The reason we do what we do in the PGA Tour is giving back to the community and to charity, and our charity programs are currently on hold. People don't realize that the site was built out in April, so we had spent well over $1 million on the site, and you know, the 4 weeks prior to the tournament, the event was canceled. We usually do over $800,000 in ticket sales, and that went away. So we have a lot of great sponsors that have paid us in full, some sponsors that have deposited, some sponsors that hadn't paid us yet. So we're truly doing two different PGA Tour events in a matter of a couple months in two different, completely different scenarios.
You just got to keep your head down and keep swinging. Yeah. That's the easy part, right? Well, the RBC Heritage will be back at Hilton Head June 18th through the 21st. The Medical University of South Carolina's hospitals in Lancaster and Chester are mostly back to being fully staffed. A little more than a month ago, around 75 of MUSC's 900 layoffs happened at these two upstate locations. South Carolina Public Radio's Scott Morgan has this report.
Normally for a story like this, you'd be hearing the sounds of a bustling hospital in the background. But drifting through a hospital ward is not an option open to radio reporters right now. So you'll have to take my word that the Lancaster campus of the Medical University of South Carolina is busy again, for the first time in weeks. Apart from the glass panel at the security desk and the masked guard who signed you in the lobby, you might not even know that there's anything that had come along to slow business down in the first place. But something sure did.
Across MUSC Health as a whole, we needed to get several hundred thousand dollars in expense out per day.
What Scott Broom is referring to is the sudden need to remove several hundred thousand dollars a day from the hospital system's operating budget. That includes the Mothership campus down in Charleston, two community hospitals in Florence and Marion, and the two upstate campuses for which Broom is the CEO, Lancaster and Chester, where
it was several tens of thousands of dollars per day that we had to reduce our expenses by just to maintain financial viability.
The hiatus of elective surgeries and outpatient procedures led to 900 layoffs and furloughs across the 17,000-employee MUSC health system in April. 75 of those layoffs happened in Lancaster and Chester, and the employees who did get to keep their jobs upstate either got reduced hours or reduced pay. That, for the record, includes Scott Broom. Now for the good news.
Fortunately, in the last maybe 4 weeks, we've seen volume begin to pick up. Since the lifting of the restriction around elective cases by the governor, specifically, we've seen volumes begin to recover.
So much so that MUSC Lancaster and Chester are actually zeroing in on where they were at the end of March. Outpatient services are resuming at both campuses, and Broom says hospital employees are being phased back in. He expects to be 100% staffed again by July 1st. Now for the less good news.
Emergency department volume has been slower to recover in our division and statewide and then even nationwide. That's a phenomenon that we're seeing really everywhere.
ER volume in Chester and Lancaster has been down significantly since April. And that's a problem because the life-threatening conditions that people had before South Carolina came to a standstill, they still have. Broom says a lot of patients are just afraid to come to the hospital now, and he's really trying to tell them how bad it is to think that way.
The risk from ignoring chest pain or from ignoring the signs and symptoms of a stroke because you're afraid to come is very high. We have seen instances to where people have just waited too long, and then the options for a full recovery become limited. So it is imperative that people seek care for things for which care needs to be sought.
And now the potentially good news. MUSC Lancaster and Chester started the journey back towards normal by expanding virtual care immediately, Broom says. Every resident in South Carolina, in fact, can still get virtual care through the MUSC health system. And with the new frontier, a technical one, Broom says the practice of healthcare and public health could benefit immensely.
Think of the infection control benefit. So we're all not walking in and out of doctor's offices, potentially exposing ourselves to others or exposing others to ourselves.
And he says going more virtual might bend more than the infection curve.
I think it also has the potential to bend the cost curve in healthcare. If we convert hundreds of thousands or millions of visits a year to virtual care, the investment in virtual care is a lot lower than building a building to accommodate all those visits.
Over time, Broom says, virtual care has the potential to be transformative to the healthcare industry, even if, or maybe even because, its hand has been forced.
Thanks, Scott, for that report. You can find that story and others on SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Now, this is our wind-down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Are you back to work? Have you been to a restaurant lately? Are you okay eating inside with other folks? Or what will it take for you to be comfortable going out and about? Tell us at 803-563-7169. This is our new normal. Do we say new normal? It's just life right now, folks. And we're all in this together. So let us know what you're doing or what you're not doing at 803-563-7169. And you might just get on the pod. You can also tell us if you want us to keep doing these three episodes a week. Sounds like a lot of people do. Sounds like our bosses got to you. Anyway, AT, do we have any messages?
We absolutely
do. Oh, no, that's
do.
What you think. No. I got a message. I got an email voicemail. Yeah, that's right. We got a voice memo from an email. That's right. You can do that, folks. You can send me a voicemail. You can call us. You can email. And we got this one from a professor from Clemson University. Clemson.
There's a silent P. Clemson.
Oh, yeah. Clemson.
Roll the tape.
Roll email.
Greetings, Gavin and AT. I'm calling from a city in the upstate that happens to share its name, which by most metrics is the best university in the state and also happens to be my employer. We have been living in strange times since spring break, and the outlook for the fall brings additional adaptations to this new normal. I do know this, my colleagues' top priority has always been the health and safety of the students as well as each other. Outside of worrying about how my bad jokes land during lectures on Zoom, writing grants, and checking my email for favorable reviews on papers, my time has been spent, like most of my neighbors, on the yard. There seems to have cropped up a bit of a competition, with each house trying to demonstrate their prowess in domestic horticulture. Never before have I seen such manicured lawns and truck after truck of mulch winding their way through the narrow roads of my neighborhood. The biggest stress in my life has been going to the grocery, donning my mask like a bank robber before entering. I get frustrated by the lack of certain items, people not seeing the bright arrows marking which way to go down the aisle, and feel like I've struck gold finding one bag of white lily flour at the store, allowing my daughter to get the biscuits she requested as part of her normal Saturday morning routine. I do miss the time before COVID. Much of what I miss are the joys of living in a small college town. I miss walking across the dewy grass to go teach class on Tuesday mornings listening to the lead. I miss the random happenstance of going to get coffee, where in the same encounter, I'll be ridiculed for my thoughts on an issue and then asked to join the committee that will then select the committee. I miss seeing my colleagues at the local watering holes on my way home, promising my wife that I'm just about to get home. I miss the vibrance of my town. Soon enough, these simple joys will return. And we can all share a glass of brown liquor together.
Brown liquor.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I know our caller said he didn't want to be identified, so we'll just call him the professor.
Mm.
Very interesting. I love hearing these people's stories. It's great to know what everyone's doing. I've been down here hanging out with my parents again down in James Island. Spent the weekend down here. Probably going to get another little haircut trim up because I know it's going to be hard to get an appointment with my barber. Sorry, Martha. Let's just talk through this in the future. But it's been nice down here, AT. It's been a nice little weekend. The humidity is back. Summer approaches.
Oh, she's back, baby. She's back. Humidity's back.
We got spoiled by such a nice spring, and now it's like, oh, yeah.
Time to sweat.
What are you doing? What's going on?
I had one of those really boring, it was so rainy here in Colombia over the weekend, you know. Mm-hmm. I had one of those really boring quarantine days where there's just absolutely nothing to do. All your feelings feel like you're hungry. and you're just like, I don't want to watch TV. So I read my stupid book about spiders. I really, really hate it.
You were so amped that you got a huge book, huge sci-fi book, good reviews, but you just been slogging.
It's not great. I don't love the Children of Time book. Hopefully it gets better. I'm about 300 pages into like a 500-page book, so... Oh. It's really dragging, and I'm dragging. I mean, you hear it, folks. I'm being honest with you. I'm opening up.
It's affecting me, even though I'm far away.
Yeah, I have postpartum book depression or something. I don't know. What about you, Gavin? How's it been down there?
It's been good. I actually started reading the Dalai Lama's book. Very interesting. I'm learning that I need to be more compassionate, even though I think I'm already compassionate. You know, that's not being... I mean, that's just who I am. Everyone knows this.
You're right, Dalai Lama's wrong. So there.
But the cool thing is about that book and so many other books is that if you have Amazon Prime, you have access to a lot of free books that you can check out from them and magazines. So I've been just going through stuff on my Kindle, the Kindle app on my iPad or my Kindle itself. So it's like, check it out. If you get tired with one of your boring books, there's plenty of free stuff out there on Amazon, y'all. You're already paying for
it. I like a real book. I'm a big trophy hunter, you know?
I used to be like that. But then when you move stuff around so much, you're like, oh, my God, why am I lugging these books around? But it is funny. So you can have people and be like, well, did you notice my book collection?
Yeah, my many bound books, my first edition Infinite Jest.
And it's not that it's a large collection, like quantity. It's that the books themselves are very large. I don't have not that many, but just several big books.
I have the largest edition of Goodnight Moon in the world. So, I mean, that's just me. It's bronzed on my mantle.
It's just Infinite Jest.
You can't tell I bronzed it, so it just looks like a big bronze book. You don't know what it is. I'm trying to get in Guinness really badly.
Yeah, and, you know, like I mentioned before, we're going to wrap this up, but I've received several books over the year from some publishers that I need to review because we need to start doing our lead bookshelf podcast, vertical, whatever you want to call it. Like, I want to sprinkle them over the summer. You know, they're not necessarily beach books, but there's some interesting political books that some of our listeners might be interested in, and we're going to start dropping those pods. Hopefully soon that might be the way we transition into three pods a week if we're not doing
three COVID pods.
There's a lot of content out there too, guys, and I don't think we're going to necessarily get rid of the three pods, but we're going to transition into something just as great. So we're still working on it. Don't worry. The lead is here for you. The lead will always be here for you. Never leave the lead. We love
Never
you
Never leave us.
And thanks for tuning in. And you can follow me on Twitter as well at Gavin Jackson once you get your fill of news, because again, take some time, chill out, call your friends, you know, read some books. Even if you get sick of it like AT was, we know what it's like. We are here for you, our lead community, throughout this situation as it continues to develop. We are still in full-scale hashtag lead laugh love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening, and be well, South Carolina. Peking duck.
Peking duck is delicious. I like to eat it up.
My mother is a Peking duck. That one just really hit.